we start, I see a former colleague of mine in the courtroom, and I guess I'm wondering, is Mr. Anderson a party or is he counsel? Okay. I need to make disclosure then to counsel. And we were former colleagues from White and Steele. I believe I can be fair in this case in any event, but if any party has any reason why you would like to strike me from this panel, you may speak now or you may notify the court by 10 a.m. tomorrow if you want to consult with your client first. If you do not want to proceed with oral argument in the case, under these circumstances, I would understand that.
If I might consult with my client, Mr. President.
Yes, and if now that I believe I also am friendly with another person who belongs to the association as well. I did not recognize this prior to today. Thank you, counsel. I wanted everybody to have that information. I didn't know about this previously, and that's all fine. It's all fine. Okay, when you're ready, please proceed, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Victor Boog, attorney number 2561, appearing on behalf of Mr. Lewis, who is present. Mr. Lewis initiated this condemnation action to acquire access across the Glen Elk property to 320 acres that he owns in unincorporated Jefferson County, which does not have access to a public road. The petition was only filed after 6 or 8 months of negotiations with the Glen Elk attorneys, in which we attempted to negotiate in good faith and offer a good faith money for the access sought. In fact, the evidence is uncontradicted that Mr. Lewis offered $50,000 for a fee interest in the access, $25,000 for an easement, and that those amounts were twice what the appraised value testified to was at the hearing before Judge Offer. No other counteroffer was ever made by the association. In effect, they simply didn't want this to happen, and they weren't prepared to do give us easements for whatever number might have been discussed. Upon filing the petition, which we sought this access for development of Mr. Lewis's property as residential property. Turns out this property is zoned agricultural 2 in Jefferson County, which requires a minimum lot size of 10 acres. So you could have a maximum of 30 lots, more or less, taking down some acreage for roads to accommodate these uses. The case proceeded to a hearing. It was called an immediate possession hearing, but it actually dealt with all the issues raised in the answer by the Glen Elk Association. They argued, for example, in their answer that we did not negotiate in good faith before bringing the case, a statement that was, or a defense that was later acknowledged to be, they didn't want to proceed with that at the hearing. They also said that this wouldn't serve a public purpose, that it wasn't necessary, that we had other access to a public road, all the things you might raise as a defense in such a case. A hearing was held in December of maybe 2 years ago, quite a while ago. And the court, at the end of the hearing, asked the parties to submit written findings and conclusions and arguments and so forth. The judge determined that Glen Elk had not established that this property had access to a public road. The court also concluded that good faith negotiations had taken place before this case had been brought. But the court said that you have an independent duty to negotiate for immediate possession. She called it temporary access. We dispute that in our briefs. There is no such requirement in the statute, and indeed...
Did the court back away from that finding in its reconsideration order?
It did, in a sense, but when it filed its final dismissal of this case, it went back to the form of dismissal submitted by opposing counsel, which included that as one of the grounds for saying we didn't meet our constitutional or statutory burden. The other thing it did is that even though it recognized on incontrovertible evidence that there is no access from this 320 acres to a public road.
Let me interrupt. Is that really incontrovertible? What about the Glansman property? Doesn't your client's company control that?
Yes, and the easements serving the Glansman property is pertinent to that property and that property only. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Based upon, if we even wanted to take a judicial notice, there's an easement of record today that demonstrates that. Mr. Glansman was the gentleman who provided the access to the Glansman property testified in the case and said, this is pertinent to the 40 acres, there are 37 acres of the Glansman property, and that's all. And as a consequence, we didn't have any right through an associated company or otherwise to grant access to South Elk Creek Road, period. And the court so found. So what happened in this case? The court concluded that because Mr. Lewis couldn't tell the court whether this property was ultimately going to be developed for 10-acre lots, and maybe as many as 30, or whether it might get carved up into 35-acre parcels where you wouldn't even have to plat it, that it was speculative as to what the potential uses were going to be, and given that she couldn't decide whether or not the width of the access we sought was adequate. The irony is that it was almost like we hadn't asked for enough. But in fact, as we know from the Bear Creek versus Genesee Foundation case, you're supposed to determine the reasonableness of the access sought based upon the reasonable expected uses. And those expected uses included uses at 10 acres a parcel for upwards of 30 parcels. The irony is that whether you have one ranch of 320 acres or you have 30 10-acre parcels, the requirements for access roads in Jefferson County are not significantly different. Up to 16 units, you need a 16-foot paved surface with 2 feet berms on either side, or drainage on either side. If you have more than 16 units, then you have to have a 18-foot paved surface with 3 foot on either side for ditches. The reason we sought 70 feet in width was because there are drainage issues and there are slope requirements. All four witnesses, the county's engineer, my client's engineer, the surveyor, and my client's son, who's developed 35 miles or more of roads in Jefferson County in the mountains, all testified that 70 feet wide was basically what we needed to make sure we could satisfy all the drainage requirements, all the slope requirements, and so forth. No testimony was presented by Glen Elk to the contrary. They didn't say that I don't like your route across our property. They didn't say there was a less intrusive route across the property. It was basically uncontested evidence. So the judge says, well, you know, because I don't know whether or not the 70 feet is going to be adequate, and that was the irony about it. She said adequate to meet the county's requirements. I'm going to conclude that you haven't proved your case. And she dismissed the case. The only reason I can think of that she might have said that was that the engineer who testified for us said that he had assumed that the normal 2 horizontal to 1 vertical might have caused these slopes to go even beyond 70 feet. But he had assumed that he could develop this property, or he could have this property developed with a steeper slope, because this is a decomposed granite in the mountains. Almost uniformly, you get slopes that are more steep, then two horizontal to one vertical. And he testified that he thought that was the case here. The county attorney, excuse me, the county engineer agreed with him. And so here we are. We think that we not only have proven that we were entitled to go forward on our case as pled, but that if the court really wanted to change the width of the road that we asked for, it could have done something like in the Wilkinson versus Gaffney case. In that case, I think the person seeking to condemn wanted a width of about 60 feet. Court decided that that was more than was necessary, so they gave them less than that. But they did not throw them out, did not dismiss the case, and did not charge them with attorney fees because somebody decided that maybe you asked for more than you needed. Here, the irony is that counsel not only got this case dismissed, but they also are pursuing a claim for attorney fees on the grounds that we didn't have a constitutional right to pursue this petition and condemnation. And I submit that's absolutely false. There was no way to get to a public road, and this is a case where my client negotiated in good faith, and after that, it's just a question of whether this court thought what we wanted was reasonable and practical. And ironically, Glen Elk presented no evidence that what we asked for was in the wrong place or was too much or too little.
Mr. Boog, I want to ask about this Buffalo Park development, because I'm looking at the judge's order and she says something about a road through Buffalo Park development parcel. Was that an option? How does that play in here?
Okay. If you were to look at the opening brief in this case, I attached an appendix that showed the location of this property in connection with the Buffalo Park property to the north. And I don't know if you happen to have that handy. If I might approach, I'm happy to show it to you.
You may approach.
Is that your exhibit N?
Yes. I don't remember if it was in or not, but
exhibit 14, it's marked.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, my client, through family connections and family corporations, has the right to get access through the parcel to the north abutting 285. But the problem was is that in order to get there from the 320 acres south, we had to go through a so-called barbell where the topography was 30 degrees and we couldn't build a road through there. And that was uncontested at the hearing, and for good reason. I mean, it would have taken hundreds of thousands of cubic yards of material to be moved, and we couldn't meet county standards in any way whatsoever. So as a consequence, the engineers came up with a plan to avoid this mountain in this barbell and go along with a natural topography, which took us into the Glen Elk property to avoid that dilemma. So any other questions? I'll save my last 3 minutes or so for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boo. Council may proceed.
Good afternoon, Amanda Bradley with the firm Hale Friesen on behalf of the Glen Elk Association. With me at council table is my partner, Alan Hale. May it please the court. I would first like to start off by addressing a few points that were raised in the opening arguments. The first is that Mr. Boog states that the court concluded that Glen Elk did not prove that Lewis had no access to a public road. And Glen Elk does dispute that fact. I do not believe that the trial court in this case made a decision that Mr. Lewis's property is landlocked. And we certainly did present contrary evidence throughout the case to the trial court.
What was that evidence that it was not landlocked?
Just as Judge Rothenberg was referring to, the Buffalo Park parcel is immediately adjacent to 285. That parcel is owned by Mr. Lewis and his family, just as the two other parcels that were at issue in this case. And the collective family members who owned the Buffalo Park parcel did grant an easement to access the southern Lewis parcels.
Are you asking us to pierce the corporate veil in this case?
No, Your Honor, but my point is that the Lewis property, the 14-acre strip and the 320-acre southern parcel, they are not landlocked in the sense that they do have present legal access to a public road. And I don't believe that that was a determination that the trial court got to in this case.
But didn't the trial court, at the final page of her initial order, I think it's page 14, said that respondent, that's you, right, has not presented sufficient evidence to determine whether the petitioner has a present right of access under either theory. So at the very least, I think we have to take it for purposes of deciding this appeal that it is a landlocked parcel with no other access. Now, whether you have a right to make other arguments on remand may be a different issue, but don't we have to take that as a given now that for us deciding this appeal that there is no other access?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because that provision or that section of the trial court's order was referring to the so-called Glansman easement that connected the Colorado Mountain Properties parcel. And these are also described on Exhibit 34, the various parcels that I'm referring to. And that raises another issue that Mr. Boog addressed in his opening statements, that Glen Elk did dispute the practical use of that Glansman easement and the easement over Gray Eagle subdivision and whether that was a present enforceable right.
Well, that's a factual issue, isn't it?
That is a factual issue. And that, I believe, is what the trial court was referring to on page 14 of its order, which is the record site 362. The court did not make a determination specifically about access to 285 through the Buffalo Park parcel. In fact, the trial court acknowledged in its order that Norman Lewis, Ron Lewis's son, granted specific access through that parcel to 285.
But how can we make a finding? At very best for you, there's no finding in your favor on these issues.
I don't believe that there was a finding at all, and I think that's my point, is that it wasn't a controverted issue at the immediate possession hearing. And I believe that that is one of several determinations that the trial court would still need to make in order for Mr. Lewis to take immediate possession of the property.
So what is your argument and how we can affirm it outright in your favor? That wouldn't lead to an affirmance, I don't think.
Well, in this case, I believe that the trial court got it right on the need and necessity grounds. Mr. Lewis is required to show that the proposed way of necessity is indispensable to the practical and reasonable use of his property. And the trial court's inquiry into the use of Lewis's property was entirely appropriate and I think required under the Bear Creek versus Genesee case. Here, the evidence supporting the proposed use of Mr. Lewis's property was vague, conflicting, and certainly supports the trial court's decision that the use was speculative. Mr. Lewis testified about possible residential uses, but as Mr. Boog stated, it ranged from 9 homes to more than 30, depending on whether the property is divided into 35-acre parcels or 10-acre parcels as permitted under A2 zoning. But if the trial court is to consider the proposed use, which is part of a larger development project, then it's possible for Mr. Lewis to construct 75 homes on 10-acre lots, or as indicated in his submission to the Jefferson County Planning Commission, more than hundreds of homes and a commercial center.
But under the Bear Creek case, aren't we required to assume that the existing zoning was going to be used, and why wasn't the trial court required to do that?
I believe that the trial court did assume existing zoning, which was A2, and
so why is that speculative?
Because in this case, there was testimony about use in excess of that, and again,
but the trial court wasn't permitted to look at any use in excess of that, was it? So why is it speculative?
Well, I think that the testimony was speculative on several grounds. The first is that as was stated earlier, there could be 9 homes, and there was, I believe it was Exhibit 27, showed a mere cul-de-sac, that the proposed road on Glen Elk's property would lead to a cul-de-sac serving 9 homes. But there was also evidence presented at Exhibit B that the road on Glen Elk's property would be part of a complex road system that would serve Mr. Lewis's entire development project, which could mean Buffalo Park parcel adjacent to 285.
Why is it speculative if the trial court is required to assume current zoning, and as opposed to these expanded uses?
Under current zoning, then, there would be there could be up to 75 homes.
Why does that matter? Well, how can she deny an easement, assuming that there was necessity? And I understand your point about there was no finding about the need to use anything other than the barbell. I understand that. But assuming that it was landlocked, why was she required to look at anything other than current zoning?
I believe that a part of the trial court's analysis has to be the burden on Glen Elk's property. How much traffic will really be going across this road, and what the road will really look like? And in those terms, there really was almost no testimony about the amount of traffic or the burden that this easement on Glen Elk's property would impose.
Well, let me ask you another question. Considering that there was uncontroverted testimony that your side put on absolutely no evidence to show that a route across the barbell could be used that would be okayed by Jefferson County, do we even need to remand for a finding on that, or can we say as a matter of law that there was no access over that strip?
Well, on cross-examination, and I should back up, because one of the issues that we raised in the underlying case was that the immediate possession hearing proceeded within about 2 weeks of notice, and it was set for half a day. Mr. Lewis's witnesses ended up, and we were granted a full day at the time. But we did not call specific witnesses to present expert testimony on the matter, but we did cross-examine the witnesses that Mr. Lewis called and established, in my opinion, that Mr. Lewis had not submitted any plans to be approved for construction of a road within the 14-acre strip. What was at issue were some preliminary conversations with Jefferson County staff concerning several options that Mr. Lewis's engineer came up with. It wasn't an actual submission to the county for approval. And until that happens, I don't believe that there is evidence that they cannot build a road through that property.
Are you saying you're entitled to an additional hearing so that you can present such evidence? And if so, on what authority?
No, I'm not saying that. I understand that immediate possession hearings can proceed fairly quickly. And in this case, we just weren't there. There wasn't time to conduct discovery and engage expert witnesses and the like. We don't believe that we would need additional hearing on that particular matter, although certainly if this case were remanded for further findings, it would be our intention to get expert witnesses to testify in that regard. I believe that the vague and conflicting testimony about the intended use and the character of the proposed easement on Glen Elk's property in this case fully support the trial court's determination that it could not determine the proposed use with any degree of certainty, let alone whether Mr. Lewis's proposed use would be reasonable or practical under the circumstances.
Ms. Bradley, I'm having trouble with that. I think Judge Terry hit on some of it. And, and I read the Bear Creek or Bear Elk case to really preclude what the district court did as a matter of law, to say that the proposed use of this A2 zone property, he had the legal right to do it if somebody got approval. To say it's too speculative, that seems to be at odds with the case law that says you look at necessity in terms of using the road to that proposed use, but you don't second guess whether that proposed use is going to be a permitted use. Isn't that really at odds with your argument? Seems to be at odds with the case law.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The Bear Creek decision, in my understanding, is that the trial court in that case was able to make findings about the amount of traffic that would be traversing the way of necessity. And in that case, I believe that there were I can't remember the exact number of proposed developments that would be on the land, but it wasn't my understanding, it wasn't the degree that this is, and it wasn't the wide range of possible homes and possible amount of development that would be served in this case.
But in Bear Creek, seems to be necessity is, do you need a 12-foot strip or a 15-foot strip or a 50-foot strip? That's the kind of necessity they were looking at. They weren't saying you don't need any strip because you're not likely to get that use of your own property.
Well, I believe the Bear Creek decision was first an endorsement of the trial court's authority to make factual findings based upon the evidence presented concerning the need for a way of necessity. But also, the trial court had already made a certain degree of findings concerning the amount of traffic and the burden that would be imposed upon the condemnee in that case. Here, the trial court was really unable to focus or narrow that use at all. If we're talking about an easement that's going to serve 9 homes versus an easement that's going to serve 400 or commercial or agricultural or the whole host of different options that Mr. Lewis may have under A2 zoning, this court was unable to even make the most basic of findings, which is that that way of necessity is indispensable to his use of his property.
But the problem is he's coming to say, here's my proposed use. It seems to me under Bear Creek, you've got to say, oh, that's a given. Okay, now how much of the easement property how much of an easement do you need over this property to serve that use? Mm-hmm. Rather than saying, you're never really going to get that use at all, so you don't get any easement.
Right.
Isn't that really different than what happened in Bear Creek?
I understand, and first I would point out the court's reliance upon Mr. Lewis's testimony that he wanted to quote unquote develop the property. There really wasn't a whole lot of testimony at all about what he intended to do. As I mentioned, there are two exhibits that talk about how they're going to be subdivided. Exhibit B, page C2, I thought was important as far as the overall development plan. And then exhibit 27, which cut it up into 35 acre sites. Mr. Lewis devoted the great part of the immediate possession hearing, just as he has in this appeal, to proving the specifications of the road. And as the trial court noted, you can't even get into a discussion about the road specifications until we understand exactly what that road is going to be used to serve. And while the term residential use was discussed at the immediate possession hearing, there certainly was broad references to anything permitted under A2 zoning. And again, I believe that the trial court in the Bear Creek decision, at least from the factual discussion that this court made, was they were able to make more of a determination or more specific determination about the proposed use than what the trial court wasn't able to do in this case. Court has any other questions? That's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Bradley.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
The A2 zoning description of what uses are available under it is part of the record in this case. The most intense use is 10-acre single-family residential use. There's no commercial allowed in it. There's no any of the other industrial uses that they're alluding to. And it's 334 acres with the barbell. You couldn't build anything in the barbell to begin with. And the 320 acres, even if you discounted road acreage, 32 is the maximum number. All four witnesses testified that the road as proposed would serve adequately that number of residences.
Mr. Buga, what do we do about the fact that the trial court did not make a finding as to whether it was possible to have a road through the barbell?
I think when the court said, we don't think Glen Elk met its burden to prove there's access in other directions, that covered the waterfront. It wasn't just
She was talking about that specific. I just looked at that particular paragraph, and it did mention the Glansman property.
Yes, because that's what they argued about, Your Honor, at the hearing. They never even attempted to argue that we could somehow go from the southern 320 acres through the barbell with a road that the county would approve out to the north.
We understand that. We're just trying to not engage in any fact-finding.
Okay.
That's something that is reserved for the Supreme Court and for trial courts.
The case in this instance was nobody could approve a road through the barbell at the county level, not by Board of Adjustment or any other way. It was so far out of whack in what the requirements were that it was virtually impossible.
But since, if we were to hold that Glen Elk prevailed on a legally erroneous basis, that the trial court made legal error in her ruling, wouldn't the natural thing be remand for any factual cleanup that she wants to do?
I think the only question is whether or not the trial court erred in its two reasons for denying Mr. Lewis the right to proceed with this petition.
And then the remedy would be a remand for further proceedings consistent with the opinion, which
right.
can include findings of fact on other theories, no?
I don't think the court needs to make any further findings of fact other than the fact that if the reasons she gave were inadequate and contrary to the law, then they were not adequate to justify this dismissal, and it should be reversed and sent back for further proceedings. And
you have a factual burden of showing that your property is landlocked, and you're saying I carried that burden. And,
in spades.
And you may well have, but I don't see a finding, a clear finding by the trial court that you carry that burden.
Okay. I think the burden is on the Glen Elk party under the law to prove that we had alternative access. They didn't carry that burden, and that's the only burden that's at issue here.
And the trial court definitively found that on every possible other access area?
They simply found that it didn't satisfy its burden. Now, whether it should have considered other alternatives and whether or not whether it should have said expressly there's no way to get to the north, I don't think that matters because they had the burden to prove it, whether it was to the south or the north. They pushed on the south that we had an access to South Elk Creek. They never even attempted to argue to the trial court that we had access to the north. And now they want to bring that up for the first time? I don't think you can do that on appeal.
Up, sir.
Excuse me?
Your time is up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course. That completes our afternoon docket. The bailiff may announce a recess.